You're listening to Turkish Football Weekly, available on the World Football Daily Club podcast feed. If you're a member of World Football Daily, you can go to the site and stream the show anytime to your computer, mobile phone, or tablet without having to download or sync anything. If you're not a member of World Football Daily, just search World Football Daily Club podcast in the iTunes store and download the World Football Daily Club podcast feed for free. Enjoy the show. Hello everyone and welcome to Turkish Football Weekly for the week of January 30th, 2014. My name is Atta Dizdar and joining me this week on the podcast, he was here a few weeks ago talking about the whole dealings with the Ronaldinho transfer to Beşiktaş, a transfer that ultimately failed to happen, and his opinions on that. I want to welcome Volkan Çelik to the podcast. Volkan?
Hi, thank you for having me on the podcast.
Sure, not a problem. So let's get to Week 18 results of the Turkish Super League as the Turkish Super League returns from its winter break. We'll start off with Friday and Saturday results. Friday's only results, so Kasımpaşa and Karabükspor play to a 0-0 draw. Saturday's results, so Gençlerbirliği beat Rizespor 3-1. Bursaspor beat Eskişehirspor 3-1. Trabzonspor and Beşiktaş playing to a 1-1 draw. So Kasımpaşa losing points to Karabükspor at home. That'll be the final match of their behind-closed-doors ban. Taking a look at Saturday's matches, Oktay Delibalta, Jimmy Durmaz, and Ante Klusic scoring the goals for Gençlerbirliği there, while Engin Baytar scoring the only goal for Rizespor via a penalty. That's three straight wins for Gençlerbirliği in the league, and Rizespor's futility since Week 5 continues. As for the Bursaspor-Eskişehirspor match, Fernandão, who got loaned off by Atletico Paranense to Bursaspor in the transfer window, scores two goals in his Bursaspor debut in the 22nd and 47th minutes, and Stanislav Šestak scoring the goal in second-half stoppage time for Bursaspor, while Aytaç Kara in the 62nd minute scoring the only goal for Eskişehirspor. Now, there was an interesting development in the match as goalkeeper Ruud Boffin got a direct red card in the 77th minute for tackling outside the box during a scoring opportunity, so Sarıbaş Çetin had to go in goal for the rest of the game due to Eskişehirspor using up their subs. So Bursaspor now on a 7-match unbeaten streak in the league, while Eskişehirspor suffers back-to-back losses in league play. But Volkan, you had told me before the podcast that you had watched the major matches. So let's talk about the major match out of Friday and Saturday matches, the Trabzonspor-Beşiktaş game. Emre Güral scoring the goal for Trabzonspor there in the 15th minute, while Hugo Almeida in the 85th scoring the goals for Beşiktaş. Everybody figured that this would be a match that would be kind of interesting because of the whole deal with the Turkish Court of Appeals making its ruling on the whole match-fixing deal. But for Beşiktaş, this was an opportunity, really, to gain in the standings. And although that Fenerbahçe did win on Monday, slight spoilers ahead, it just seemed as though that Beşiktaş, after that first goal, I mean, what did you think? It's like, right after that Trabzonspor goal, I really seem to think that they really didn't seem to play from behind as well, but Almeida getting the goal 5 minutes before time kind of saved their butts there.
Yeah, I was watching the whole match, and I just think it was really a bad performance from Beşiktaş. Literally, Trabzonspor were like on us from the start, and I'll be honest with you, I wouldn't like to say this, but if a team had to win, Trabzonspor would have deserved to win 100%. I didn't feel like Beşiktaş deserved to win from the performance we got, but obviously I can't complain because we got a point out of it, even though we didn't really deserve to get any points in the match. I wasn't really happy much with Beşiktaş's performance, but yeah, I mean, luckily we did get the point. Yeah, if I was to probably pick a player that I thought stood out from Beşiktaş, it would probably have to be Almeida. He was the only player that match that just worked his socks off all match, and the other players just basically didn't turn up for the match, man. They were just like literally just ghosts on the pitch.
It just seemed as though that Trabzonspor, they were just all over Beşiktaş in the game. And
yeah,
Trabzonspor, that could have been a crucial win to get them up in the standings. However, it didn't quite work out for them with the Almeida goal at the end.
Yeah, I mean, I agree. I mean, I'll be honest with you, this was a game every Beşiktaş fan was hoping we would win because obviously after the TFF, they rescheduled the Kasımpaşa match. So Beşiktaş had basically a game in hand over everyone else. And this basically would have been a good opportunity if it was to beat Trabzonspor to catch up more on Fener. But, you know, like I said, it was really a bad game from Beşiktaş, and we was very, very lucky to leave the match with 1 point.
Okay, anything else you want to say about Friday or Saturday matches, or do you want to just move on to Sunday and Monday?
That's all I can really say about the Beşiktaş-Trabzon match, so, you know, feel free to move on to Sunday.
I wanted to speak a little bit about Bursaspor and Eskişehirspor, but I didn't really get to get an opportunity to watch that. Although Bursaspor, they're not doing too bad. I might have to keep my eye on Fernandão. And well, Rizespor, well, it's just getting really, really bad for them.
Yeah.
Ever since week five, it's just been a nice downhill slide for
definitely,
them.
Definitely, definitely. I mean, Rizespor were one of the you know, the surprising teams at the start of the season. I mean, they started off really well. You know, they made the good chances, you know, Ali Adnan definitely being one of them, but I just don't know what happened to them.
We'll follow them throughout the season, because it's looking like that they might have to be in a relegation dogfight.
Definitely.
Especially when we move on to Sunday and Monday matches, and Sunday's results saw Sivasspor beating Kayserispor 3-0, Elazığspor at home beating Akhisar Belediyespor 2-1, Kayseri Erciyesspor losing to Antalyaspor 3-1, and Gaziantepspor and Galatasaray playing to a 0-0 draw. And in Monday's only result, Fenerbahçe at home beats Konyaspor 2-1. So Atif Şeşu with two goals, Azir Erdal scoring the goals for Sivasspor there. Henrique Sereno of Kayserispor got a direct red card in the 80th minute for an elbow to the face of Sivasspor's Pedro Oldoni. And Kayserispor, their woes continue as their winless streak in the league has now hit six matches in a row. Elazığspor looks like they might be in contention to get out of the drop zone as they beat Akhisar Belediyespor 2-1 with goals from Mertar Yüce, who scored into his own net, and Deniz Yılmaz in the 53rd minute. Bilal Kassab with the only goal for Akhisar Belediyespor there, and Elazığspor have actually won three out of the last four league games, so good on them. As for the Antalyaspor match against Kayseri Erciyesspor in Kayseri, Tita Göçek-Vedersen and Semi Şentürk scoring the goals for Antalyaspor there, while Yasin Öztekin scoring the only goal for Kayseri Erciyesspor. Kayseri Erciyesspor have also lost six straight in the league, while Antalyaspor snaps a four league match winless streak. And moving on to the two main matches from Sunday and Monday, İbrahim Kızıl, the Gaziantepspor chairman, was re-elected to the post before this game, and Sergen Yalçın was on the sidelines as manager. Now, we had reported some weeks ago that he was going to quit after the first half of the season was over, but he is now back. And Galatasaray now have a seven-match unbeaten streak, while Gaziantepspor have back-to-back 0-0 draws. They still have only lost once in the league since Sergen Yalçın took over as manager for them. And Gaziantepspor haven't scored in the league in the last 341 minutes. The last time they scored was through Cenk Tosun in the 19th minute in Week 15 against Kayseri Erciyesspor. Going on to Fenerbahçe and Konyaspor, Jaume Campos got the scoring started there in the 21st minute, while Bruno Alves and Egemen Korkmaz scoring the goals for the comeback win for Fenerbahçe. Fenerbahçe now winning four out of the last five league games, while Konyaspor have only won once in the last five league games, and Alexander Hleb made his debut for Konyaspor in the game. But let's move back to the Gaziantepspor Galatasaray match. You know, there was a lot of talk about the whole deal with the Bruma loan.
Yeah.
You know, we reported he was out for the rest of the season with an ACL tear, and obviously there was the whole rumors and all this Tea Garden talk, if you will, about you know, what this game would entail. But for Gaziantepspor, they did a heck of a job defending. But I guess really the question for me is, in that game, did Gaziantepspor really want the win, or did Galatasaray kind of lose the 3 points here?
I don't know. It was really kind of a tough game to make a call on. I mean, Gaziantepspor, you know, they did play well. They obviously had a lot of chances which they missed. As for Galatasaray, all I can say is, yeah, I mean, they were playing well as well. And I don't know, it was just a game that where both teams just literally missed chance after chance. I mean, Ebue, you know, I was watching him a lot as well in that match. He was getting forward a lot, and every time he would get forward, he would just lose the attack for Galatasaray and would start a counter-attack for Gaziantep. I just didn't know how to like, think of the match. I mean, I just think it was just one of those games where both teams just missed chances after chances.
Yeah, and it seemed as though Didier Drogba was kept in check in this game. You know, there was a Gaziantepspor defender, I can't remember his name off the top of my head.
Yeah, Binya, that's it, Binya.
Yeah, Jules Binya, yeah, exactly.
He had one heck of a game. In my opinion, if I was to pick a man in the match, it would definitely be him, because he was the one player that, like, just, like, I caught my eye, like, you know what I'm saying? Because he was just amazing stopping Gaziantep's attacks. literally almost every Garcia attack, it was him, the one that's dropping it.
You know, he really impressed me in this game, you know, with his defending, because everybody thought, you know, maybe Drogba would have a couple goals, but, you know, Zubinha, all power to him. Like, he was in beast mode for
definitely
this.
Definitely beast mode.
Gaziantepspor, hey, I mean, they've only lost once in the league since Sergen Yalcin took over as manager, and, you know, he's still continuing on, but he's going to have to take about a two-week break so he can get his pro coaching license. And I should tell everybody that Volkan is also working on his pro license.
Yeah.
So you are coaching kids. We'll talk about that a little bit later. But let's move on to the other major match on Monday. Fenerbahce taking advantage of points lost between their title chasers. And surprisingly, both of the center backs actually scored in this game. And, you know, a lot of people will say, you know, what's the best center back duo? You know, some people will argue that Eskişehirspor's Diego Agüero and Jerry Akinfenwa is definitely up there. And Bruno Alves and Egemen Korkmaz are certainly up there as well.
Yeah.
And to have the central defenders in this game come through for Fenerbahce, kudos on them, because they have now different kind of scoring threats. And it just seems as though to me that for all the talk about, you know, Fenerbahce, you know, winning games in the last minute and whether it's legit or not, you know, these aren't my words. These are, you know, the words I see around Twitter.
I just think there's a lot of haters on Fener. I just think that, you know, they're just, I don't want to get to the point, but I just think there's a lot of Fener haters out there.
But still, I mean, when they're behind, they seem to come through in the clutch, you know what I mean?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, they're just a team that never, ever gives up. They just fight to the end, which is what I like about them.
Other than that, you got anything else on this game? Because I really didn't think there was really much to report on, except that Fener is going to have their ground closed. We'll talk more about that in a moment.
Yeah.
And, you know, I really didn't hear much cursing, because there was a lot of things from, you know, the Fener, you know, fan leaders saying, you know, don't curse in this game and things like that. But, you know, Fenerbahce does come through in the clutch once more. And for Konyaspor, here's what's interesting about Konyaspor. Everybody in the league has at least one road win except for Konyaspor.
Yeah.
So I just found that pretty interesting.
Yeah, that is very interesting. I mean, speaking of the match in general, I mean, I watched the match and it was obviously a great game. Both teams played really, really well. And, you know, it was literally one of those, like, you know, for the neutral fans, it was a great game, because straight from the kickoff, it was high tempo. Both teams were attacking end to end. It was literally like a basketball match at times. I mean, don't get me wrong. Obviously, Fener were the favourites to win, but you have to give Konyaspor credit as well. They played really, really well. Their defender, was it? I think Selim Ay, you know, he was linked with Beşiktaş. That's possibly, that was one of the reasons why I was watching the match, just to keep an eye on him. I'm glad I did watch the match, because it was really a good game. And, you know, like I said, even though Konyaspor lost, you have to give them credit, because they put out a good performance against Fener.
Yeah, and if we look at the standings going to that, Fenerbahce still leads the league, this time with 44 points. Galatasaray 10 points behind with 34 in second. Sivasspor in third with 32 points. And Beşiktaş is in fourth with 30 points.
Yeah.
Now, we should tell you that we are recording this on a Friday, but Beşiktaş does have a game in hand, and we will talk more about that a little bit later, because the Kasımpaşa-Beşiktaş match that was ruled to be replayed does have a date of when it will be replayed. So Beşiktaş in fourth with 30 points, and Kasımpaşa in fifth with 29 points, but both Beşiktaş and Kasımpaşa have a game in hand. Now, looking at the bottom five, Konyaspor is in 14th with 20 points. Rizespor and Elazığspor have 16 points, but Rizespor have a better goal differential. They're in 15th with a minus 9 goal differential, while Elazığspor is in 16th with a minus 19. And both Kayserispor teams are down at the bottom. Kayserispor with 12 points, and Kayseri Erciyesspor also with 12 points. Elazığspor, maybe it's not all hopeless for them, like it might have been a little earlier on in the season, but for Fenerbahce, I believe this is the first time in, I think, 14 years at this point in the season that a leader has had a double-digit lead in terms of the point standings. So you're looking at the standings, although Beşiktaş is in fourth, and for Beşiktaş and Kasımpaşa, they both have a game in hand, so that replayed match that they're going to have in February is going to become extra crucial for them. But, you know, with Sivasspor winning, you know, don't count them out in terms of perhaps sneaking into a Champions League spot.
Nah, I mean, I wouldn't rule out Sivasspor of a Champions League spot. Obviously, you know, Roberto Carlos, you know, credit to him, he's got the team playing really well. I mean, before Carlos took over, when Sivasspor had Riza Çalınbay as manager, they weren't really a team that would obviously finish in the top four, you know, and try and get into Europe. But Carlos, you know, he's doing a great job with Sivasspor, and I really do believe this year they could possibly make it into Europe.
Yeah, and, you know, Atif Şeşu is still leading the goal-scoring standings. You know, he's been a real revelation. And, you know, it almost seems as though, like, Roberto Carlos is making Sivasspor even better with their play. I was always thinking it's his first coaching job. I don't think he really knows the league all that well. And I think, like, he might have a little bit of trouble. But you look at Sivasspor right now, they ain't doing too bad.
Nah, definitely. Sivasspor is playing really well. And, yeah, I agree with you. Having looking at a few of Sivas's matches, Roberto Carlos has definitely got them playing good football. So, you know, you have to give Carlos credit for that. But, yeah, as for Atif Şeşu, you know, I can't believe, you know, how he's the top goal scorer at the moment in the league. It's really surprising because, you know, previous seasons at Sivasspor, he didn't really look like a goal scorer, but it's just surprising to see him, you know, top goal scorer in the league.
Let's take a look at the bottom of the standings then. I mean, Elazığspor, it might not be so hopeless for them after all. They've got a few problems earlier on in the league, but Okan Buruk, you know, maybe his system is starting to set in. And for Rizespor, we mentioned him earlier, you know, ever since that flying start of the season, they're just in free falling, you know. Both Kayseri teams, yeah, it's not looking too good for
them. It's not looking too good. I'm really surprised that Kayserispor, to be honest, because Kayserispor, you know, start of the season when they had Robert Prosineski, they made some really good transfers, and young transfers as well, young talented transfers. And yeah, like I said, everyone was expecting them, you know, to finish maybe in the top eight possibly. I myself was actually expecting them possibly to, you know, probably get the last European spot in the table. But, I mean, looking at the table now, they're literally joint bottom with their rivals, Erciyesspor. And just really shocking. I mean, with the players that Kayseri has, you wouldn't really expect them to be where they are now.
Yeah, and they've had the injury bug hit them hard over the last, you know, month or so. I believe Sefa Yilmaz is out. So that's going to be a problem for them going forward because, you know, they've been plagued by injuries. And, you know, like you said, I mean, Robert Prosineski, I mean, I know that he did lead Kayserispor to a very good finish last season, but it just hasn't worked out this season. And for Domingos Paciencia, who coached his first game as Kayserispor manager, you know, it's probably going to take some time for his system to kick in.
Yeah, definitely.
And it's just going to take some time, but, you know, does Kayserispor or even Kayseri Erciyesspor have the time to really get back up, perhaps have a chance of not suffering from the drop?
I don't know. I mean, it's looking a bit hard for them, to be honest, because, you know, they're both at the moment on 12 points at the bottom of the table. You know, obviously, there's still quite some time, a long way to go for the league still. I mean, but, you know, anything can happen. But if Kayseri and Erciyes want to survive, you know, now would be the good time for them to start actually winning matches now and getting points.
All right, so let's move on to the schedule for Week 19 then. Friday, the 31st of January, we'll see Beşiktaş hosting Kayseri Erciyesspor. Now, that match will be held at the Atatürk Olympic Stadium, as will the rest of Beşiktaş's home matches for the rest of this season. We head into February on Saturday with Kayserispor hosting Kasımpaşa, Antalyaspor hosting Gaziantepspor, and Eskişehirspor hosting Fenerbahçe. Sunday's matches will see Karabükspor hosting Elazığspor, Konyaspor hosting Sivasspor, Akhisar Belediyespor hosting Gençlerbirliği, and Galatasaray hosting Bursaspor. And Monday's only match will see Rizespor hosting Trabzonspor. You know, you wanted to talk a little bit about you know, the defensive back lines, and you know, it might become as much of an issue this weekend because, you know, Galatasaray is going to have maybe a little bit of a tough time against Bursaspor, but that is a home match for Fenerbahce. We're looking at the top of the table. It's going to be pretty tough for them going into Eskişehir, but other than that, I mean, what kind of stands out to you? I mean, maybe Monday's match, Rizespor hosting Trabzonspor. You know, Trabzonspor doesn't have the best road record out of many of the teams of the league, so it may give Rizespor a chance to get a win at home. But what interests you?
Yeah, I mean, speaking about Trabzon, you're right. Their away record is really not that good. At home, don't get me wrong, at home they're probably, if I'm not mistaken, I think they're the team in the league that's got one of the most wins at home.
Right,
but away,
Trabzonspor's home record is 7 wins and 3 draws. They haven't lost.
Wow, that's brilliant. That's amazing. I mean, yeah, I mean, you just said the home record itself. They haven't lost at home, but obviously, for some reason, away, they just can't seem to play the same. But moving on to the league defense, you know, before you were speaking about centre-back partnerships, and, you know, you were talking about Eskişehirspor having good partnership with Lakaminko, you know, Galatasaray's defense and Fenerbahçe's. If you, I don't know, if you want to ask me about who I think's got the best defense partnership, I'd possibly have to say Fenerbahçe has, you know, Egemen and Bruno Alves. I mean, if you look at the table, for example, you'll see Fenerbahçe is first, and obviously they're not first for a reason. You know, they're probably been the most stand-up team in the league at the moment, performing well, you know, they're fighting to the end, and their defense has been solid as well. I mean, Egemen and, you know, Bruno, if you look at the how many goals they concede Fenerbahçe, their goal difference is plus 25. And if I'm looking at the goals conceded at home, only 8 goals, which is for a team like Fenerbahçe is brilliant. In my opinion, I think the best centre back partnership in the league right now has got to be Fenerbahçe, Egemen, and Bruno Alves.
Interesting. Well, Galatasaray actually has less goals given up overall with 17. So they might have a pretty good partnership, you know, with Semikaya in the back. I don't know really if Aurelien Tchedjou has been, you know, kind of like living up to expectations, but I think he's a pretty good center back there. Although Galatasaray really has kind of abandoned the 4-4-2 for more of a 3-5-2 with Mancini. You see a lot of these great defenses. I mean, I know Pedro Franco's been a big prospect for Beşiktaş, and I think as long as, you know, he gets playing time, I think he's going to do really well. I know Thomas Seabalk is out, you know, for a good while, and, you know, that seems to be a bad loss for Beşiktaş, but, you know, if Pedro Franco steps in, you know, he could probably be the clutch defender that maybe is Seabalk's successor.
Possibly. I mean, you know, there's been a lot of hype about Pedro Franco before he joined Beşiktaş. Basically, I was kind of surprised that we managed to sign him because before we was linked with him, I heard a lot of the top clubs in Europe wanted him. Man City, Juventus, Porto, they were all linked with Pedro. And when I heard Beşiktaş had linked with him as well, I wasn't really expecting us to sign him. I mean, I was like, why would you know, Pedro come to Beşiktaş when he could go to Porto, Juventus or Man City? But when we signed him, I was a bit surprised really that we signed him, that he chose to come to us. And yeah, I mean, a lot of the Colombian people, my friends that I know, they tell me, you know, he's really a good prospect, and they label him as the golden boy of Colombia. And having seen him play a few matches, he does look like a good player for, you know, for the future. But whether he's a centre back, I'm not too sure. I think Pedro Franco would be better off playing defensive midfielder because, in my opinion, for a defensive player, he's really calm and good to the ball at his feet for a defensive player. So I would like to see Bilic give Pedro, you know, a go in defensive midfield for a few games, because I seriously think with his, you know, ball control and ability and passing ability, he likes to play the ball simple out of defence rather than, like, you know, how all defenders do it, just a long ball out of defence. I think he'll be good in defensive midfield.
Now, you were speaking about Trabzonspor's road record. I want to give you their exact road record. They have a record of 1-1-6. 1 win, 1 draw, 6 losses. You know, for Rizespor, that might be an opportunity to finally break this little jinx that they've been having.
Possibly. Like we're saying about Rizespor, they started the season off really well. And I just don't know what happened to them. I mean, after the fifth week, they just started dropping.
Well, I think that's going to do it for the first segment, unless you have anything else to add.
Not really.
All right, then. So let's take a break. We'll talk about some news in our next segment, including when the Kasımpaşa-Beşiktaş match from Week 15 will be replayed and some moves in the transfer window. So stay tuned. And welcome back to Turkish Football Weekly. Just give a brief update of the Turkish Cup results for match day 4 in Group A. Eskişehirspor beat Bursaspor 1-0, and Aksaray-Belediyespor beat Sivasspor by the same score. The standings there: Bursaspor leads with 8 points with a goal differential of plus 3. Aksaray-Belediyespor in second with 8 points with a goal differential of plus 2. Eskişehirspor has 6 points and Sivasspor has 3 points. In Group B, Tokatspor loses to Antalyaspor 2-0, and Galatasaray at home beats Elazığspor 3-0. So the standings there in Group B: is Antalya Spor with 8 points, Gullet Strike with 7 points, Elza Spor with 5 points, and Tokat Spor with only 1 point. So, I don't think you watched any of the Turkish Cup, so I guess maybe we can go on to the news then?
Yeah, I mean, I didn't have a chance to watch it. I was just too busy, and I didn't have a chance to watch it. So possibly, yeah, if we're going to move on to the next topic.
Okay, so let's get to the news then. As mentioned earlier, the Custom Pasha Beşiktaş match will be replayed. We have a date on that. So the Custom Pasha Beşiktaş match from week 15, ruled to be replayed due to a rules infraction, will be replayed on February 11th. Some transfer news from Galatasaray. Galatasaray have officially loaned off Bruma to Gaziantepspor for the rest of the season. Although Bruma has a torn ACL that will keep him off the field for the rest of the season, Galatasaray will be paying his salary while Bruma is at Gaziantepspor. Galatasaray have released left winger Albert Riera from his contract. He was given a severance package reported to be $750,000. Galatasaray defender Danny Nanku has been loaned out to Gaziantepspor for the rest of the season, and Galatasaray winger Nordin Amrabat has been loaned off to Malaga for the rest of the season. The loan fee there is €300,000. Now, Galatasaray have acquired defender Koray Günter from Borussia Dortmund for €2.5 million, and Günter signs a 4.5-year contract with Galatasaray. Borussia Dortmund does have the right of first buyback for Günter for €7 million after the 2015-2016 season. Gaziantepspor manager Sergen Yalçın will be away from the sidelines for the next 15 days as he will obtain his manager pro license. Fenerbahce forward Emmanuel Emenike, subbed out of the Konyaspor match due to an injury, will be out for the next 3 weeks due to a hamstring strain. Eskişehirspor have ended the loan of midfielder Alfred Ndiaye. They had taken him on loan from Sunderland this past summer. Rizespor have signed Elazığspor defender Ahmet Görkem Gürk for the rest of the season. Kasımpaşa have loaned off midfielder Özer Hurmacıv for the next 1.5 years with an option to buy for €1.5 million. The loan fee is €500,000. Antalyaspor have signed Gençlerbirliği left-back İlkay Durmuş for an unknown fee. Kamil Grosicki has been released from a Sivasspor contract. He has now signed a 3-year deal with Rennes in France. Trabzonspor defender Sol Bamba will be out for the rest of the season with a broken right ankle. Beşiktaş have signed midfielder Jermaine Jones on loan for the rest of the season for €200,000 from Schalke. He will be paid €700,000 for the rest of the season. There is an option in the contract to sign permanently for the following 2 seasons, in which he will be paid €1.8 million per year with a €10,000 match bonus. Henrique Sereno of Kayserispor gets suspended for 4 matches and fined 26,000 Turkish lira for elbowing Pedro Oldoni of Sivasspor and unsportsmanlike conduct towards the opposing team after the ruling was given. And finally, Fenerbahce gets a 1-match behind closed door suspension for fan misbehavior and cursing and a 150,000 Turkish lira fine. This is their 5th infraction this season. I guess we can talk about the Kasımpaşa Beşiktaş replay first. We now have a date on that, so both of them do have a game in hand. You know, I was reading some things where, you know, some people might have had a problem with the entire match being replayed instead of just from the spot that Donk spiked the ball, the minute that Donk spiked the ball. But you know, I believe Kasımpaşa wanted to appeal, you know, not to get the match replayed. And Beşiktaş appealed to get a 3-0 forfeit win for the rules infraction. But I think this is probably the most fair thing that the Turkish Football Federation could do. Although there might be some issue as to whether the whole match should be replayed or just pick it up from where Donk spiked the ball.
Yeah, I mean, this is a bit of a hard one for me. So, I mean, obviously, I was watching that match as well, and I just couldn't believe the referee, you know, he gave the yellow card to Donk and he done a drop ball instead of giving the penalty. I obviously, as a Beşiktaş fan, I think replaying the match was a good idea. It was the right call, in my opinion. But I'm not too sure if that, whether it was right to play the match from the minute where Donk done that incident or if it was right to play from kickoff again, like, you know, starting the whole match again. I possibly feel Kasımpaşa might have a slight case there, you know, whether the match should be replayed from the minute where Donk done that incident. But in my opinion, I think it's the right call. Finally, I've heard the TFF done for the first time this season about Beşiktaş to get the match replayed. I think it's the right call, and let's just see how it goes from there.
Yeah, and it should be interesting to see what happens on that date because both teams, you know, are still competing for European spots, but, you know, Kasımpaşa, they've been a little bit iffy over the last few weeks in terms of, you know, their play. I mean, they had a really good stretch where they were just winning matches and drawing matches, you know, just not losing, but they've been really iffy. And to lose at home to Akhisar Belediyespor of all teams, especially giving up goals to Akisar Belediyespor, when before then, Akisar Belediyespor had never scored a road goal this season. There's some cracks in that armor there.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, Kasım Paşa, like I said about Rizespor, Kasım Paşa is also probably, in my opinion, has got to be the most, surprising team this season. Obviously, if you look at the transfers they made some really, really good transfers this season. And, they started off well. And like you said, they're having some small cracks. To be honest with you, I was really surprised they lost at home to Akisar Belediyespor as well. Obviously, that was a match I was expecting Kasım Paşa to win, but I was just really surprised when they lost at home.
All right, then, let's move on to what is now an official loan. Bruma does go to Gaziantepspor, even though he does have an ACL tear. And we were talking before we started recording this segment that maybe it would have been a little bit more wise for the registration of Bruma to be frozen, obviously due to the whole foreigner cap deal. And I believe that Izet Hajrović has now gotten his license, so he may make his Galatasaray debut this weekend. But you were talking about maybe the Turkish Football Federation should have granted a request to freeze his registration while Galatasaray pays his salary. Now, yeah. Obviously, Galatasaray is still paying his salary while he's going to be at Gaziantepspor. But, you know, you were talking about, you know, this is kind of sketchy. And I believe even Andy Brassel, I read on his Twitter, I believe both of us follow him on Twitter, that it has to be the weirdest transfer of the transfer window. But people are talking about how unethical it is, or, you know, whether this should be the right move. But perhaps instead of maybe freezing his contract like Galatasaray was rumored to have done or requested the TFF to do, they actually did request the TFF to have Bruma's contract frozen, maybe they could have frozen his registration, and then they could have gotten, you know, obviously they signed Alex Telles, and as of the recording of this podcast, we don't know if his registration has gone through as of yet, but Izet Hajrović's registration has. It does look a little weird, but like we said last week on the podcast with Khan and I speaking about it, there's nothing illegal about it.
Yeah, like I was saying to you before the podcast, this is just one of the most weirdest chances I've ever seen. And it's really dodgy as well. I mean, I just find it dodgy. Galatasaray loaning an injured player to a team just before they pay that team. You know, I just find that a bit weird as well. But like you said, I mean, according to TFF, their rules is legal. But I just think this move, what Galatasaray done, you know, loaning Bruma, an injured player, to Gaziantepspor, it's basically, I think, in my opinion, just, you know, for Galatasaray to get their, you know, one on the TFF, basically, just to make TFF look a bit more silly. I agree. I think Bruma's contract could have, like, not contract, sorry, his registration could have been frozen instead of Galatasaray having to loan him to Gaziantepspor. The other day, I was reading Sergen Yalcin, who's obviously the manager of Gaziantep, and Sergen was saying, we loaned Bruma from Gaziantepspor just to free a space for, you know, one of Galatasaray's new transfers, because Galatasaray's, their own Turkish team competing in the Champions League, and we want them to do well. Now, what I found weird was Bruma, you know, his registration, he has to get registered again for the Champions League. So why don't Galatasaray cancel his, not cancel, but why don't they just freeze his UEFA registration as well? Instead of that, you know, loaning him out, all they have to do is just, when it comes to the next registration, just not include Bruma, and, you know, they can still keep Bruma at Galatasaray and pay his wages instead of loaning him out to Gaziantepspor.
Yeah, because it does sound like a little bit suspicious, and, you know, there were some people who said it was a little bit suspicious, but yeah,
definitely,
it would have made a lot more sense if they froze his registration.
Yeah.
You know, I believe that, because I don't know when the deadline is for registering new players before, you know, the transfer window is over, because the transfer window in Turkey ends on February 3rd, which is this coming Monday as we're recording this.
Yeah. If I'm not mistaken, Turkish League player registrations, for example, you're supposed to register players before the season starts. You're supposed to register new transfers when the season transfer window is finishing in the summer. Also, you're supposed to register players again in the winter transfer. Like, when the transfer window is finished, you're meant to register your players. And I just find it weird. I mean, why can't Galatasaray just freeze Bruma's registration instead of having to loan him out to Gaziantep?
Yeah, because that's what really makes it suspicious from, you know, the outside looking in. I mean, okay, this isn't anything against Galatasaray, but, you know, I think a lot of people would say, and even the TFF said it was unethical, but there's nothing they could do because it's perfectly legal.
Yeah,
it's
there's
a
nothing
loophole,
illegal,
and they exploited a loophole.
Definitely. I think this is possibly a kind of a way for Galatasaray just to get one on TFF, I think. But, I mean, it's fair enough to Gasly. I mean, they done nothing wrong. Like I said, it's fairly legal for them. And, you know, like I said, they just exploited a loophole in the TFF and done it.
All right, then, let's move on to the Jermaine Jones move then. Now, his Schalke contract actually ends by the end of the season. But Besiktas have gotten him on loan. And there is an option for him to sign permanently for the following two seasons. There will be, obviously, no transfer fee. But, you know, they pick him up for 200,000 euros. And, you know, for Jermaine Jones, obviously, he's going to need some playing time, especially for the U.S. Coming up in this World Cup. I'm really familiar with him in terms of seeing him on the United States men's national team. He's mostly Melo light. If I had to describe him to you as a Besiktas fan or to any of the Besiktas community, I would describe him as very much a Melo light.
Yeah.
He's a little bit more disciplined than Melo, but, you know, he can be aggressive at times and get needless cards.
Definitely.
But other than that, I mean, yeah, his age is a little bit of an issue because he's 32. But other than that, I really don't see any problem with this signing.
First of all, just going back to Jermaine Jones' transfer, as far as I'm aware of, Besiktas paid Schalke 200,000 euros, and they actually signed Jermaine Jones just for 6 months. So basically, we just paid 200,000 euros to Schalke and signed him for 6 months only. And I think we added a clause on his contract where we can sign him, you know, first option.
Yeah, the clause is there is an option in the contract that he could sign permanently after the season's over for the next two seasons.
Yeah, I mean, there's just a lot of confusion going on about his transfer. I mean, a lot of people are saying that we signed him on loan, but there's no point of signing a player who's on the last 6 months of his contract on loan. What most people didn't understand was we paid Schalke 200,000 euros and signed him only for a six-month contract with an option to extend for 2 years. And, yeah, that's what I just wanted to say first about his contract and transfer. But going back to Jermaine Jones, the player himself, I think this was a really good transfer by Besiktas. This is the type of player Besiktas needs. Ever since Fabian Ernst left us, we never really properly replaced him. And I just think Jermaine Jones, you know, he's that type of player to, I think, would be the perfect replacement for Fabian Ernst. I haven't watched much of him, like, much of his matches, but I can see he's definitely one of them, you know, hard man, anchor man type of players that every team needs, but the other teams in the other hate playing against him because he's you know, he's such an aggressive player. And he's a Melo-like player, like I said. Underozen, our director, sporting director, sorry, he said it as well. He goes, Besiktas needs a Melo-type player. And, you know, I agree with that. And I just think I'm glad we signed him because he's the perfect replacement to, you know, fill in the hole left by Fabian Ernst.
I think the only main issue that I have is his age. Because it seems as though it's one of those short-term deals. Because you got to remember something. He is 32, and by the time his contract would potentially end, if he gets his contract extended, or he signs that two-year deal, exercises that option, he'll be 34.
Yes.
So, obviously, the age is going to be an issue. But he obviously needs playing time, if we're talking about it from the United States point of view. And there's been a lot of Americans that have gone to Turkey in search of playing time. Freddie Adu did. Jozy Altidore did. Maurice Adu did. He was at Bursaspor at this point last season.
Yeah, Maurice
so
Adu, yeah.
There's a lot of, you know, very good American players and, you know, going to Turkey for playing time. So in terms of that, you know, obviously this is good for the American players, you know, to get playing time. And for Jermaine Jones, obviously he's going to get the playing time, perhaps next to Atiba Hutchinson. And it seems as though that the only thing that I've got a problem with is that, you know, the player's age might work against him because he is on the wrong side of 30. But, you know, for Jurgen Klinsmann, the U.S. men's national team coach, he's kind of like one of those irreplaceables. He is that kind of bulldog in the midfield. You know, he's kind of like that defensive midfielder who is aggressive. But we all have to wonder, you know, Turkish refereeing is suspect, as everybody pretty much figures out. And, well, will he be subject to a lot of cards, whether yellow or red? So other than those two issues in terms of his aggressiveness and his age, I kind of don't see a problem with this.
Nah, first of all, if you're looking at his age, this is just my opinion, obviously. Obviously, everyone has their own opinions, but in my opinion, when it comes to footballers and their age, I don't really think age really matters, in my opinion, because, you know, as long as the player can still play well and perform, I don't have a problem or issue with his age. Like, sometimes it's to do with the player's fitness, like natural fitness. I think, like, Jermaine Jones, for example, looks like a proper fit guy, like strong guy. And I don't think his age will probably be a concern for him, as long as he can, you know, carry on playing well and give the good performance like he normally does. As for him, you know, getting possibly, you know, too much bookings in the Turkish league, all I can say about that is, if Felipe Melo can get away with it, you know, why can't Jones? I mean,
good point.
You know, like you said as well, because you obviously watched Jermaine Jones play more than me, and you said, you know, Jermaine Jones is a Melo type player, but is a bit more disciplined. So if Melo can get away with it, I think Jones should be all right as well.
All right, then. I guess we can move on to some other things. And I just wanted to talk about Fenerbahce getting a one-match behind closed door suspension.
Yeah, go ahead.
Now, I was really watching that game. I really didn't hear any cursing, and you know how League TV, you know, the broadcaster, every time there's any political chance, they usually just shut the audio off.
Yeah.
But I don't know. I can't remember anything where, you know, the fans were, you know, cursing or anything.
Definitely.
Like that. I really can't remember even hearing about that.
Yeah.
I mean,
same here. I mean, I obviously watched this match as well, and I did not hear once Fenerbahce fans swearing. All I heard was obviously political chants, obviously, because of what's going on with, you know, in Turkey and, you know, with Aziz Yildirim and, you know, the match-fixing case with Erdogan and stuff. All I heard was...
Yeah, and let's not also forget about the graft investigations.
Yeah, that is all. All I heard from Fenerbahce fans were just anti-government chants, but I didn't hear any, you know, swearing or anything. So, I don't know. I find this match ban, you know, just quite suspicious, really, and funny. And speaking of match bans, I just can't remember, like... Beşiktaş got a lot of match bans, and Fenerbahce has got one now, but I can't remember the last time when Galatasaray got a match ban.
Well, I don't know if there's a for Trabzonspor either, but I know that Kasımpaşa has had one. I think they just finished that up. I don't know. I mean, there's been a lot of criticism over, you know, the unevenness of TFF sanctions.
Yeah,
I
agree with that.
We hear that on Twitter all the time.
Definitely. I agree with that. I mean, sometimes TFF's sanctions and the fines they give are really stupid. I mean...
Or inconsistent, rather.
Definitely. I mean, Fernandez, if I remember correctly, which this is true, obviously, it did happen, but I can't obviously remember what game it was. But in one match, Manuel Fernandez got sent off, and in the dressing room, he kicked the door. And because he kicked the door cracked, and they fined him for that.
Mm.
That is really stupid.
I don't know. Maybe he just got frustrated over, you know, getting sent off or something like that.
Yeah, I mean, that's what happened. But, you know, TFF finding a player for just kicking the door, that's just stupid. Mm.
Is there anything else you wanted to talk about? I know we're probably going to talk about Sergen Yalcin for a little bit because you are actually on your way to getting a license in coaching. Actually, you told me you coach kids in England.
Yeah. At the moment, I'm going to be starting my FA Level 2 coaching, and then from there, I'm going to work towards a UEFA B license. Yeah, I mean, coaching, you know, right now I'm coaching for a club in London, coaching kids, and the club I work at is linked with Tottenham Hotspurs, which is obviously one of the top clubs in the Premier League. And it just basically, yeah, just a good experience working there and, you know, coaching kids. And obviously, because our club is linked with Tottenham, you know, we have an opportunity as coaches to go to watch Tottenham's matches and watch Tottenham team train. So it's basically a good experience for us to see how the professionals do it. And yeah, that's what I can really say about it. Just to, you know, just a chapter in life that I'm looking forward to and taking the next step.
Interesting. Because I put on here that Sergen Yalcin is going to be away for the next couple of weeks, so he's going to obtain his manager pro license.
Yeah.
I'm guessing it's from the TFF. But, you know, I guess on your way, I mean, do you want to make a kind of a comparison with maybe what Yalcin might be going through to what you're going through?
Yeah.
From your personal experience?
Yeah. From my personal experience, I think Sergen is possibly going for a UEFA B license because... It's impossible for a manager straight away to get go for UEFA Pro license because they have to obviously get the regular official licenses from the FA. Like, for example, in England, we have the FA Level 1, FA Level 2, then we have the UEFA licenses. So I think possibly Sergen must be doing his UEFA B license because he's, as far as I'm aware of, he's definitely got his Turkish coaching badges. I think he must be working for the next UEFA one. And, yeah, I think he's just working for the next UEFA one, if I remember correctly.
Can you tell me what the difference is between both of the two?
what, between the FA and UEFA license?
The FA and the UEFA license.
Yeah, the FA license is basically just a license, coaching badge to have, so you can basically coach clubs around the country, local grassroots clubs. If I remember correctly, FA Level 2 is also the same equivalent of UEFA C license. That's what I can really say about it. But what I can say about the FA coaches, sorry, the FA coaching courses, is the FA licenses are the most recognized licenses in the world. Obviously, this is why one of the main reasons people from around the world come to do their coaching licenses in England, because it's the most recognized qualification. Like, for example, you can do a coaching course in England and get your badges from England and go and coach anywhere in the world because they'll be recognized because it's from England. But if you're so obviously like a Turkish coach getting his badges from Turkey and coming to England, they wouldn't recognize it because, you know, it's just not recognized. That's why it's a good thing for people from around the world to come to their coaching badges in England.
And what's a UEFA B coaching license? I this is just really for my knowledge, and but maybe the people really need to learn like what the UEFA B coaching license is, because I've heard of the UEFA A license and they can basically coach anywhere, but just the differences between,
yeah,
you know.
Okay, yeah, that's no problem. I'll quickly explain it. This is from what my friend told me. My friend is a UEFA A license and he works for the Turkish national team. He's obviously a coach. His name is Kazim, and he's the coach that's kind of helping me with my coaching as well. He told me basically there's obviously the local coaching badges that you get from your FA. Like obviously, for example, like I just said, with England, you have the FA Level 1, FA Level 2. After you get your local coaching badges from your FA, the UEFA licenses is there's UEFA B, UEFA A, and UEFA Pro. UEFA B and A is basically the coaching badges that you use to basically coach in any club in the world. As far as I remember, with UEFA B license, if you have a UEFA B license, you are eligible to manage a team, but you can only manage them for about, I think, 3 months, I think. That's the minimum you can manage a team with UEFA B license. Sorry, with UEFA A license. You can only manage a team for 3 months, but obviously, if you want to actually manage a team and be a manager, you would definitely need to have your UEFA Pro license, because that's the license that every manager has.
Okay, so UEFA Pro is like the top license, they get, they, and you do need that. But when it comes to like A or B, I guess that's really what Sergen Yalcin is really going for, because, you know, he's already done the 3 months.
Yeah, I mean, Sergen Yalcin, because he's coaching in Turkey, I don't really think he would need to basically get a UEFA Pro. He'll be probably fine with a UEFA A or B license. He'll be fine, I think, in Turkey. Obviously, if he's going to be managing in Europe, then he would possibly need to have a pro license. But UEFA B and A is just mainly just to become a coach in Europe or around the world. That's what UEFA B and A is. Just basically, once you get UEFA B or A, you can basically coach anywhere in the world.
Okay, and that's usually like in national leagues, or you can't really do it continentally?
No, you can do it continentally. Like, you can basically, once you have your UEFA B and A license, you're able to basically coach anywhere in the world, basically, because UEFA B and A's are recognized qualifications.
Oh, okay. So I could probably get a UEFA like B license and probably coach in the States if I wanted to.
Yeah, definitely. If you want to coach in the States, you wouldn't even need a UEFA B. You can just basically apply for, not apply, but you can basically do a coaching local course from the MSL. And once you get the qualification from there, you can easily become a coach in the MSL.
Oh, okay.
The UEFA ones are only if you want to basically do coaching in Europe or around the world.
Okay, I see. Anything else you want to talk about, or do you want to just go ahead and wrap this up?
I just wanted to add something quickly as well. I just wanted to ask you quickly, what do you think about Koray Günter, you know, the transfer? Do you think he's a good player?
I've heard some good things about him. Like, he's like a real hot young prospect. You know, a lot of people have been saying, like, this is a good youthful transfer for Galatasaray. And, you know, obviously he's German trained. You know, he's been in the Dortmund youth ranks. And, you know, he's kind of like one of those Turkish guys in Germany that the TFF wants to have play for the Turkish national team. You know, like Robin Yalcin and, you know, who's that guy at Liverpool? I can't remember.
Oh, Samet Yeşil. Yeah.
Yeah. It's like one of those, like there are like six players of Turkish descent on like the German youth teams,
yeah,
that are supposed to be really, really good, and Koray Günter is one of them.
Oh, I just wanted to ask you because I'm not too sure on him. I mean, the first time I heard about Corey Günther was where my cousin in Germany. He plays for a semi-professional team in Germany, and
really,
yeah, he plays for a semi-professional team in Germany in Stuttgart, and he played against Corey Günther, and he played against, for example, Serge Gnabry. Serge Gnabry is obviously everyone knows he's that young talented kid at Arsenal, and he's obviously played against Corey Günther and Sami Khedira's brother. And the reason why I'm asking you if you know, because probably I thought maybe you watched Corey like play more than me, so you would know better. But my cousin,
yeah, I'm the only thing I've seen him play. I've never seen him play, but I've just heard things about him.
Okay, same here with me. That's why I just wanted to ask you maybe if you knew. But yeah, I mean, my cousin's played against him, and my cousin told me apparently Corey Günther is not really all that. He's not really worth all that hype. My cousin plays a central midfielder, and he's obviously played against Corey Günther, who's centre-back. So he's been up against Corey Günther one-on-one, and he did tell me himself in the matches, because Corey Günther, defensively, his position is not good, apparently. Like, he leaves too much gaps in defence. So that's why I just wanted to ask you, maybe, if you've seen Corey Günther play.
Well, he's only 18, so that's... you know, he's got time to develop that sort of thing, but,
definitely.
You know, I'm kind of always wary about, you know, young Turkish talent coming to Turkey, because, you know, there are always times where it doesn't work out, so it is a bit of a risk for Günther to go to Turkey, but sometimes they want to come for the money, or the fame, or the girls, or whatever, but I don't know if I would take your cousin's words kind of seriously, but, you know, I mean, he's your family, and, you know, I guess I can trust you, because at least... The guy's played against him.
Yeah, I mean, that's what I'm saying.
How old is your cousin, by the way?
He's 19, but he played against Corey Günther when they were young. I think, if I remember correctly, when my cousin played against Corey Günther a few years ago, my cousin was 16, and Corey Günther, I think, was the same age as him. That's why I just wanted to ask, obviously, if anyone watched him play, if he's any good, because my cousin who played against him then told me, apparently, he's not that good, but obviously, back then, they were kids, so they probably must have improved by now, surely.
But then again, Günther is now going to Galatasaray, and, well, people are going to say, oh, well, your cousin still plays semi-pro. But, yeah, I mean, that's interesting that, you know, you have a family member who actually played against somebody. I just found that really quite interesting, and maybe I wanted to have you tell that story.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, my cousin, yeah, I'm just telling you what he told me, and he told me, you know, he's played against Corey Günther, and apparently he goes, Corey Günther is not worth, like, all the hype, and obviously... Serge Gnabry played against him, and he told me, this is what he told me himself, he goes, Serge Gnabry will definitely be a world-class talent.
But he doesn't think Günther probably would be unless he works on his defensive positioning.
Definitely, because he told me in that match against when he played against Günther in the German semi-pro league, he told me, you know, Günther, defensively, he made a lot of mistakes. Like, he leaves gaps, basically. He gets dragged out of defense easily, and then he allows the other team strikers to move into that space.
But, I mean, he's 18, so, I mean, he's got time to develop that
obviously,
sort of
definitely,
thing.
Definitely. He's young. He's a kid, still growing up, learning the game. He's got plenty of time to develop, and hopefully, you know, he'll become a good player, defender in the future. And, you know, fingers crossed, he'll hopefully choose to play for Turkey.
Well, I think that's going to do it for this week's edition of Turkish Football Weekly. Volkan, I want to thank you for filling in this week.
Thank you, Otto. Thanks for having me on the podcast.
And we thank you for listening to Turkish Football Weekly this week, and we will see you all next time.